Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Again, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 7, Text 92. Please repeat. Nacha,
Nacha,
Gau,
Gau,
Bhakta Sange,
Bhakta Sange,
Kara,
Kara,
Sankirtana,
Sankirtana,
Krishna Nama,
Krishna Nama,
Upadeshi,
Upadeshi,
Kara, Sarvajana Nacha Gau Bhakta Sange Kara Sankirtana
Nacha Gau Bhakta Sange Kara
Krishna Nama Upadeshe Kara Sarvajana Nacha Gau Bhakta Sange Kara Sankirtana
Nacha Gau Bhakta Sange Kara Sankirtana
Krishna Nama Upadeshe Upadeshi Kara Sarvajana Nacha Gau Bhakta Sange Kara Sankirtana
Nacha Gau
Krishna Nama Upadeshi Jaya Sarvajana
Krishna Nama Upadeshi Jaya
Sarvajana Would any of you like to try eating? Synonyms, Nacha, go on dancing,
go on dancing.
Gao,
chant,
Bhakta Sange,
in
the society of devotees, Kara,
continue,
Sankirtana, chanting of the holy name in assembly. Krishna Nama, the holy name of Krishna. Upadeshi, by instructing. Tara, deliver. Sarvajana, the fallen souls. So, to give a little background before I read the translation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, who descended in the age of Kali in the role of a devotee, had received the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra from his spiritual master. And by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra without offense, he developed many symptoms of ecstatic love for Krishna, including shivering, standing up at Paris on the bed, dancing wildly without caring for others. And he thought that by chanting the mantra, he had become mad. And so he consulted his spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada explains that these symptoms are possible for a devotee only on the liberated platform. But even on the liberated platform, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu consulted his spiritual master. That means that even in the liberated stage, one is always under the guidance of the spiritual master. And Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master replied, my dear child, I'm very pleased with you. These are symptoms of ecstatic love of Godhead, which is the ultimate goal of life. And then he came to this instruction, very important instruction, which is not only should you yourself chant and dance in the association of devotees, but you should instruct others, and in this way deliver them as well. So, I'll read the translation, and then Anutama Prabhu will read the purport and speak. Translation. My dear child, continue dancing, chanting, and performing sankirtan in association with devotees. Furthermore, go out and preach the value of chanting Krishna now. For by this process, you will be able to deliver all fallen souls. So please repeat. My dear child, continue dancing, chanting, and performing sankirtan. In association with devotees. Furthermore, go out and preach the value of chanting Krishna Nam. For by this process, you will be able to deliver all fallen souls.
Famous purports by Srila Prabhupada. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Kija. It is another ambition of the spiritual master to see his disciples not only chant, dance, and follow the regulative principles, but also preach the Sankirtan movement to others in order to deliver them. For the Krishna consciousness movement is based on the principle that one should become as perfect as possible in devotional service oneself, and also preach the cult for the benefit of others. There are two classes of unalloying devotees, namely the Goshti Nandis and the Bhajan Nandis. Bhajanananda refers to one who is satisfied to cultivate devotional service for himself. And Bhoskyanandi is one who is not satisfied simply to become perfect himself, but wants to see others also take advantage of the holy name of the Lord and advance in spiritual life. The outstanding example is Prahlad Maharaj. When he was offered a benediction by Lord Krishnadev, Prahlad Maharaj said, Nabod jite kara duragyaya vaitana vanyas tvadvirya karyana mahatmita maitana chitaha choche tato vimukta chitasa indriyarta vayasukaya param uvahato vimunham. My dear Lord, I have no problems and I want no benediction from you, because I am quite satisfied to chant your holy name. This is sufficient for me, because whenever I chant, I immediately merge in an ocean of transcendental bliss. I only lament to see others bereft of your love. They are rotting in material activities for transient material pleasure, and spoiling their lives, toiling all day and night, simply for sense gratification, with no attachment for love of Godhead. I am simply lamenting for them and devising various plans to deliver them from the clutches of Maya. Bhagavatam 7.9.43. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains in his Anubhashya, quote, a person who has attracted the attention of the spiritual master by his sincere service likes to dance and chant with similarly developed Krishna conscious devotees. The spiritual master authorizes such a devotee to deliver fallen souls in all parts of the world. Those who are not advanced prefer to chant the Hare Krishna mantra in a solitary place. End quote. So far, continue. Such activities constitute, in the language of the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, a type of cheating process, in the sense that they imitate the activities of exalted personalities like Haridas Thakur. One should not attempt to imitate such exalted devotees. Rather, everyone should endeavor to preach the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in all parts of the world, and thus become successful in spiritual life. One who is not very expert in preaching may chant in a secluded place, avoiding bad association. But for one who is actually advanced, preaching and meeting people who are not engaged in devotional service are not disadvantages. A devotee gives the non-devotees his association, but is not affected by their misbehavior. Thus, by the activities of a pure devotee, even those who are bereft of love of Godhead get a chance to become devotees of the Lord one day. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur advises that one discuss the verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, Naitat Samacharajatu Manasati Yana Naniswaraha 10.33.31, and the following verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anasaktasya Yartartam Upayunjataha Nirbanta Krishna Sambhante Yuktam Karagya Ujate Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu 1.2.255. One should not imitate the activities of great personalities. One should be detached from material enjoyment and should accept everything in connection with Krishna's service. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anjana Shalakai, Chakshu Umitamina, Tasmai Shri Gurema, Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitami Jambutalai Swayabhuva Vedavya Muddhadasas Vatamantikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Virata Shivasa Gaura Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'm very grateful to be in this beautiful temple. So many devotees here contributed in so many different ways to manifesting Prabhupada's desire for a beautiful temple here. So you all made a lot of sacrifice in terms of time and energy and certainly money, and it's much appreciated by the congregation, of course, but also visitors like myself and people around the country. I'll just mention briefly, I mentioned this morning during Bhagavatam class, and I'm going to talk about this more in a minute. We had a very special program in Washington, D.C., that I'll describe more later. And in the incoming venue, the hallway entering this event with many VIPs, etc., we had big banners about 6 foot by 4 foot high. And we wanted to really make a positive impression on everyone as they entered this special gala event. So we needed a spectacular picture of an ISKCON temple to make a spectacular impression on the minds of all these devotees and guests, and the guests were coming. So by Krishna's grace, someone found a spectacular picture of this spectacular temple on the top of the culture hall. Looking at the temple was probably a picture that's around here. Many people must have the same picture. With the sun setting in the background, all kinds of flags running between the two buildings, and tens of thousands of people. So it's really, it's very spectacular. So we put that on the banner, and one devotee said, you have to say that's Houston ISKCON, or else people are going to think it's some ancient, glorious temple in India, when actually it's a new, glorious temple in Texas. So we put that on there so everyone could see, so that it really helped set the mood. So on behalf of devotees in Washington, D.C., thank you for loaning us the picture of your temple, so we can make a big impression. Please pray for the devotees in Washington, because we're also in the process right now of trying to build a beautiful temple. And we have a few more complications in terms of our land is on a big hill. We own 12 acres, but we can only use 2.5 acres, etc. So we have a few additional challenges. So we need your prayers. Please pray that Sri Sri Radha Neelamada, that we can build a beautiful temple there. Radha Vrindavan, please. Okay, thank you. So this is a beautiful verse here, just a few thoughts. I'm very much looking forward to hearing Maharaj's insights on this. A very beautiful verse about the desire, particularly of the spiritual master, for each of us, that the guru wants to see the disciples advance nicely. We just had a 3-day course on what it means to be a disciple in the ISKCON movement. So here, Prabhupada is particularly emphasizing that the spiritual master wants to see the devotees, the disciples, advance in their own practice of Krishna consciousness, their own hearing, and their chanting, and their enthusiasm to serve the Lord and practice their own bhajana, and practice their own sadhana. But then in particular, that the guru also wants the disciples to carry the mission forward. We were discussing for the last few days that to make serious progress in spiritual life, one should accept a spiritual master. Prabhupada also said that he was asked one time, when do you begin to get the mercy of the guru? Is it first initiation, second initiation, sannyasa initiation? When does it start? And Prabhupada responded, when you begin to follow his instructions, that's when the mercy starts. And we see that often. Many devotees don't get initiated, take initiation for some period of time, but still making tremendous spiritual progress, contributing in many, many important ways to the movement. And we know Prabhupada himself didn't get initiated until 11 years after he met his spiritual master. But he described he took the instructions of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur into his heart. And at that point, from then on, he began serving him and meditating how he could execute his order. So it's an important principle in our Vaishnava tradition, our Bodhi Vaishnava tradition, that one should accept the direction, the instruction, the shelter of a spiritual master. If Prabhupada is described here, because it's understood that the guru is the representative of Krishna. This is the way that Krishna helps us in this world. He sends his representatives. He comes in the form of an holy name. He comes to us in the form of a deity. He comes to us as a temple. He comes to us through the Shastra. He comes to us through the association of devotees. And he also, most importantly, comes to us as a spiritual master, Siksha, or instructing guru, as well as Diksha, initiating guru. And it's very important, the instructions of the spiritual master, because the guru represents Krishna. And therefore we understand that the guru's desire is the same as Krishna's desire. Not that the guru comes up with whatever idea he wants, and that is therefore Krishna's desire, but the opposite. Krishna has his desires, and because the guru is giving us those same instructions, his desire is not different from Krishna's. So therefore, he gives us insight how to make progress in spiritual life, how to purify ourselves from the different distractions, different temptations, allurements, misconceptions, and how to awaken our love of Krishna. So here, in this particular verse, Prabhupada is giving some very important insight. Very important insight, especially as Vaishnavas, devotees of the Lord, and especially as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Because we know from the Shastra and from our acharyas that Lord Chaitanya came with a specific purpose, which was to make this the process of bhakti, or awakening love of God, accessible to everyone throughout the world. And we know, of course, that Srila Prabhupada was that especially empowered devotee who took that message of Lord Chaitanya and established ISKCON communities and brought the tradition of chanting Krishna's name and awakening our love for Krishna around the world. So here Prabhupada is particularly describing to all of us that is another ambition of the spiritual master, to see the disciples not only chant, dance, and follow the regulative principles, but also to preach the Sankirtan movement to others in order to deliver them. For the Krishna conscious movement is based on the principle that one should become as perfect as possible in devotional service oneself, and also preach the call for others' benefit. So this is our mission of mercy. This is the Krishna conscious movement, just like this temple we're talking about this morning. We shouldn't think that this temple is the end of the process. You've all worked hard for many, many years to plan the structure, to raise money for the structure, to supervise the construction of the structure. Beautiful gardens, and now the restaurant's open, and so many wonderful things are here. That's the beginning. For those of you that might be thinking, okay, the temple's done, now I can sit back. No, because the Prabhupada's describing here, the temple's not really for us. Even in terms of our worship of the deities are beautifully worshipped, they're very, very opulent. But we understand Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. I don't think those are real gold jewelry, because Prabhupada told us not to do that. But even if they were, how important would that gold be to God? That's important. So chances are there, I don't know, but there are some type of other beads made from different items. Oftentimes they're plastics or resins or things like that, which when we offer them with devotion, Krishna is very, very pleased. But what pleases him is the devotion, not the opulence of the thing, but the devotion that's there. So in the same way, we build big, beautiful temples like this, and Krishna is pleased by our effort, but what's the purpose of the temple? Krishna doesn't need this temple. From where I'm sitting, it's a big, huge, opulent temple. He's the Supreme Lord. Universes come out of this plenary expansion. So the whole universe is insignificant to him. So what to speak of whatever we can offer through our temple, or our flowers, or our little puja, or we put $5 in the box, or $1,000 in the box, or $500,000 in the box. That's so important to him, really. Of course, we need to do all these things for our own benefit. But what really matters to Krishna is our devotion. So in a similar way, we built this temple as an expression of our devotion. But what's the next step? If we say, okay, we're not glad, okay, now I can sit back. Quote some verses about if you build a temple, everybody's delivered 3 generations backwards, 3 generations forward. That's in your biological family. Very nice. Okay, you delivered 100 people. according to that verse. What about the other 300 some million people that live in America? What about the other, what is it, 14 million people that live in Houston? That's a real world. So that's being described here. And sometimes the analogy is given, just like a doctor. If someone was to go to medical school, just imagine you go to medical school and you study so many years, your undergraduate program, your graduate program, you go on to medical school, internship, residency, etc. And then when you're fully qualified, you say, I feel really good about myself. I'm just going to go home and think about what a wonderful job I've done accumulating my degrees. Is that such a good idea? No, because now you're a doctor, now you're trained, now you know how to help people. So you have to go do that. And sometimes there's cases where people maybe fulfill their degrees and some other thing comes up, they can't add to that service. But generally, if you have that medical knowledge, then it's time to go and share with others. So the same way, if we're becoming Krishna conscious, as we're becoming Krishna conscious, and the more we're becoming Krishna conscious, we also have this responsibility to try to share with others. And I mentioned this morning, the example came to mind, Prabhupada, with the first child born in the Hare Krishna movement was Saraswati, who was Malati's daughter. And when she was just a little girl of 2 or 3 years old, she would go up to people and say, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada was very pleased with that, because even with her very limited capacity, she was sharing this knowledge of Krishna consciousness. So here this verse is pointing this out, that the spiritual master, our founder, Acharya, Lord Chaitanya himself, Sri Lord Krishna, they want to see us advance in our Krishna consciousness, but equally, perhaps more importantly, they want to see us share with others. That doesn't mean we become proud or pushy or condescending or aggressive. It means we become compassionate, we become merciful, we become humble, and we see ourselves as the servants of others. Because anyone that we approach, or anyone we talk to, whether it's in our office, or it's on the bus, or it's the policeman, it's the person we're paying the parking fee, or the office, or whatever it is, they're also devotees of Krishna. Every much as we are devotees of Krishna, they're also devotees of Krishna. Is they're just a little more forgetful than we are. And we don't know how long they've been here. They might have forgotten Krishna for one lifetime, and maybe they're going to take up the process very quickly. We don't know. We, consequently, we may have been here for 500 creations of the universes, billions and trillions of years, and we finally took up Krishna consciousness, and I'm thinking, I'm so much more advanced than they are. We see sometimes in our temples, some new devotee comes off the street, or whatever, comes for the first time to the temple. And sometimes we see people that very quickly advance in Krishna consciousness. And others of us, maybe we don't advance so quickly. So we can't be thinking of some bodily concept of life. Well, I'm more senior to this person. Seniority is there, we have our etiquette. But sometimes that new person just catapults in terms of their Krishna consciousness, takes on so much responsibility, so much hard work, so many sacrifices, and sometimes we're just kind of thinking, wow, how do they do that? I've been working hard for so many years and I'm still kind of held back. I still don't feel myself so sincere. So of course we don't become discouraged by that. We should become a little humble. So in the same way, we should think, this Prabhupada came from the most exalted place, which is Vrindavan. He came to practically one of the most degraded places in the whole world. He went to the Bowery. He went to New York City, Lower East Side, and not just the Lower East Side, then he went to the Bowery. It's described he had to step over drunks to get into his place. Sometimes people would literally die in the streets in front of where he was staying, a very degraded place. But he went there because Krishna led him there to spread Krishna consciousness. And he was so humble and so faithful a person, believing that these people are also devotees of Krishna and I can wake them up. Lord Chaitanya wanted to wake them up. So that's our founder, Acharya. That's Srila Prabhupada. That was his mercy. And that's why we're all devotees today. Maharaj has so many wonderful stories in past times when he was with Prabhupada and saw Prabhupada preach in so many wonderful, amazing ways. And we're coming in Prabhupada's line. Direct disciples or grand disciples. In the future, there'll be disciples and disciples and disciples. But the mission remains the same. And what's really one thing that's so wonderful about Krishna consciousness is it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the more you give, the more you get. In material consciousness, if there's a job opening at the office, there's an executive vice president office opens, and there's one position, that means either you get it, or she gets it, or he gets it. You can't all get it. And that leads sometimes to a very kind of aggressive competition, sometimes often office politics, you know. Do we ever mention to the president next time you see him what a bum this other person is, etc.? Or do we favor put in good words to them about this? You remember that favor you owe me? Well, tell them that I did that project instead of some, etc. Those things go on until it's delayed. Limited amounts of rewards sometimes lead to some kind of selfish and harmful competition. But spiritual life's not like that. Krishna consciousness is not like that. Love of God is not like that. The more we give love of Krishna, the more we get love of Krishna, even though we may be unqualified in so many ways. So that's being described here. And also, particularly as disciples and followers of Srila Prabhupada, we can see how Prabhupada just tried so many things. Prabhupada tried a few things that didn't work. We shouldn't think that everything Prabhupada tried worked. There's a famous story where Prabhupada was in the West. Initially, he was encouraging all his disciples to go out on the streets and chant. And then when they first went back to India, Prabhupada said, continue the same tradition, go out on the streets and chant. It's the Yuga Dharma, chanting Hare Krishna. So devotees went out on the streets, and they came back, and Prabhupada said, how did it go? And they said, it was great, they loved us, they all threw money at us. And Prabhupada said, stop it immediately. Because in India, who do you throw money to? Beggars. So he said, they think you're beggars, so stop it. It worked in the West, but it's not working here. So he modified things, he adjusted things. He didn't change the essential four principles, but he modified it, time, place, and circumstance. So, and then he started like membership programs, go to respectable people's homes, go to businesses, present my books. And this way he adjusted the strategy a little bit. And of course later, reestablished chanting. Now you go to India, there's some wonderful Harinam parties. People are more aware of it, they appreciate it, they join, etc. But time, place, you have to change it. So in a similar way, we should all be asking Krishna, praying to our Guru Maharaj, praying to Srila Prabhupada, please help me understand what are the unique gifts that you've given to me. Because each and every one of us, we are unique individual spiritual beings. We have a unique individual relationship with our Guru and with Krishna and with every living being. And we have unique ways to spread the Krishna conscious movement. None are better, none are worse. All are important because they come from our heart. And when Krishna sees we're endeavoring to please Him with our heart, we may think it's small, not so important. But some of those small, so-called not so important actions have a huge effect upon people. We should just keep in mind how much people are suffering in the world. And even we may think, okay, I can't go out and sell so many books. Prabhupada said sell books. Maybe I'm not so good at selling books. But you're good at smiling at your co-worker and telling them good morning. That's also an expression of Krishna consciousness. There's a story one time Prabhupada was on a morning walk. He was walking down the street. There was a man sitting in his car with the window rolled up looking kind of glum. Prabhupada walked over, knocked on the door. I think the first day he walked by, second day he walked over, knocked on the window. Man rolled down his window. Prabhupada said, good morning. Man said, good morning, and Prabhupada continued on his morning walk. There's a wonderful story in Philadelphia. They were living in a duplex house, the Bodhi's little temple on the side. They went out on the morning walk with Prabhupada. He walked down the walk, turned left on the sidewalk, and made a U-turn right back up to the adjoining house. There was a little old lady who was living there, I think by herself, within the street from who tells the story. And Prabhupada, all the boys are very anxious. What's Prabhupada going to tell her? You're old, you're going to die soon. You've got to chant Hare Krishna. You ought to get up and go over to Mangalarti next door. What's he going to say to her? He's going to preach to her. And in the words of Ravindra Sruprabhu, using the terminology of the era, he said, quote, it blew our mind. Because Prabhupada just proceeded to have old people talk with her. Like, how many children do you have? How many teeth do you have? Whatever. I don't know the specific concept. But he reached out to her. He reached out to her and made friends with her. And you know, it's hard for us to understand what were Prabhupada's thoughts at that time. I would think perhaps in part he's thinking, this elderly person's next to this little half house full of 20-year-old recent converts to Hare Krishna movement that jump and dance and play drums at 4 o'clock. And maybe this old lady should meet at least one reasonable person among the Hare Krishna movement. He might have been thinking something like that. But either way, Ravinda explains that. That was the whole conversation. Because Prabhupada was reaching out according to time and place. So in the same way, here is described, the spiritual master wants us to spread devotional service, spread Krishna consciousness. So we know we've been asked to distribute Prabhupada's literature, to go on Harinam, to build beautiful temples, to invite people to temple. But also in terms of our daily activities, people should see, they should ask, this Hare Krishna person seems a little different. How come when there's office politics, this Krishna person doesn't get so involved? Why is it when there's sometimes cutthroat activities in terms of who's going to get the promotion, they seem to be rather content to let things happen the way they happen? Why is it when everybody's struggling to try to get credit and play king to hill and drag the other person down, they actually share credit? Why is it they actually seem a little satisfied inside and not so aggressive in terms of their relationships with other people? Because after a while, when you live like that in the neighborhood and in the family and in the community and the office, people start asking. They pull you aside at lunch and say, hey, Rajiv or Paul or whatever it is, what's with you? What's your secret? I say, what do you mean? You never get angry. I mean, so-and-so just took credit for the whole project in front of the boss and you didn't get angry. What's going on?
Well, you know,
I just think of Krishna. I'm offering it to Krishna. The results ultimately goes to, and they start inquiring. And they went, well, you know, I noticed you, when you go out to lunch, you kind of like, what are those beads you're carrying around with you? Is that part of your secret? Yeah, it is. Can you teach me? I'm not sure. You really want to know? Yeah, I really want to know. Does it work? Etc. That's also preaching. There's a wonderful expression, I'll stop with this beautiful expression from St. Francis. Very famous, historical, important Christian saint, who said, you should preach all day long, and when necessary, also say a few words. Very wise. So in the same spirit, let's preach all day long, and when necessary, say a few words. Not that we talk all day long, and our words, our actions say something else. And they say our actions are louder than words. So we preach with our voices, we preach with our bodies, we preach with our hearts, try to really attract people to Krishna in any way, every way we can. Okay?
Thinking of
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. I recently listened to a talk by Srila Prabhupada in which he spoke about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. It was an unusually long talk, about an hour and 20 minutes. And he spoke about one verse of the Sarva Goswami Astakam, the eight verses glorifying the six Goswamis. The first verse. Krishna Kirtana Dhananarjana Paro Nirmat Saro Pujito. So, Krishna Kirtana, good Kirtana means loud Kirtana. And he made the point that what we are doing today in the Krishna consciousness movement is exactly what the six Goswamis did, which in turn is exactly what Lord Chaitanya did. And he made that point again and again in different ways, that we are doing the same things. Nothing different. And so Krishna Kirtana Dhananarjana Paro, chanting and dancing. Nirmatsara Pujito. And Nirmatsara means they're free from envy, and therefore they were worshipable. Srila Prabhupada says one can be free from envy only if he's Krishna conscious. And therefore he is worshipable. Dira, dira, janapriya. Dira means sober or gentle, and adira means ruffian. Dira, dira, janapriya, priyakura. And they were dear both to the gentle and the ruffians, because they were not envious of anyone. And Srila Prabhupada also demonstrated that in his, dealings with the hippies and all sorts of people. One very nice devotee in Mumbai named Krishna Chandra Das, Hrishikesh Mukhopadhyay. He sometimes says that everyone should see the old footage of Srila Prabhupada in America, 1966 and 1967. Because you cannot imagine the type of people that Srila Prabhupada was ministering to. I mean, they're so beyond the experience of people of his culture or generation, and pretty much beyond the experience of anyone, that unless you see it, you can't imagine what they were like. But Prabhupada, he was very much with them. Dira, dira, jana, priya, priya. And not even only, of course that came later, but not only human beings, but even animals. Like he was on a morning walk in Laguna Beach, and a dog approached the group of devotees who were walking down the street. And the devotees shooed the dog away. And Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna is in the heart of that dog. Like the Nutamukha was making the point that everyone is a devotee of Krishna. Right? So Krishna is in the heart of that dog. That dog saw, oh, here are some devotees. I can take shelter of them. And so Prabhupada was saying, we should appreciate that and not just shoot the creature away. So Prabhupada was, so compassionate. Another time, when Srila Prabhupada was in Bhubaneswar, somehow the devotees wanted to go to the zoo with him. And, you know, Prabhupada, he was very serious and very strict, but he also did things just to please people. So he went to the zoo, and, you know, one of those more rambunctious disciples, they came to the cage with a lion. And so that disciple started to rattle the bars of the cage. And Prabhupada was very upset. He said, you know, don't do that. After all, he's a lion. He's a king. So Prabhupada saw the best in everyone. He saw the spark in everyone, and he fed the spark. Now this point of nirmatsaro, being free from envy, and this was something that Prabhupada spoke about in different ways on different occasions. But there was one time when I felt that I was being plagued by envy. It was in Surat, India, in 1970. And I was really thinking about it, that there's absolutely no benefit. Not only no benefit, there's no reason to be envious. Because Krishna is unlimited, and therefore Krishna's service is unlimited. The opportunities to serve Krishna are unlimited. So if someone has a particular service, why should I be envious? Because Krishna's service is unlimited. And on the other hand, I could see that envy was disturbing my consciousness, disturbing my relationships. Of course, I didn't act on the envy, but it was, you know, I'd have to struggle with it. So one late morning, when Srila Prabhupada was taking his massage, I took the opportunity to ask him about envy. And his first response was, "Can you think of any reasons not to be envious?" And I had been thinking about all the reasons not to be envious. So I said, "Yes." Then he said, "All right, being envious means you don't like someone. So that not liking someone should not be directed towards devotees. That not liking should be directed towards demons who are always causing trouble for devotees and the world." Now this answer made sense, but I think that we should discuss a little what that could mean. Because seeing that everyone is ultimately a servant of Krishna, and that, you know, the best service to them and to Krishna is to bring them back to Krishna. So we don't want to deal with them in such a way as to push them away. But that not liking, and so sometimes it's said that Jesus Christ said, "Hate the sin and not the sinner." So that not liking should not really be directed against the person per se, but against, you know, the behavior or the quality that is detrimental to that person spiritually and detrimental to the world. Another thing that Srila Prabhupada said about envy is very relevant to today's verse of purport. And that is that if you have knowledge and you don't share it with others, you become envious. Just taking the example of the doctor, you know, if he has knowledge that can help cure someone and he doesn't do it, it's like a type of envy, it's a type of violence. So Srila Prabhupada said, if you have knowledge and you don't share it with others, you become envious. And how does that work? Well, everyone has the right to serve Krishna. If you basically reply Krishna and Nitya Das. And so, to please Krishna and to help others, we should bring them to serve Krishna. And if we have that knowledge and we keep it to ourselves, or any knowledge related to that, we become envious. So it means we want to, like, be better than others. You know, we want to have something that they don't have. Whereas the mood of a devotee is whatever he has, he wants to share. You know, the more we give, the more we get. So Srila Prabhupada told a story of a famous religious, or so-called religious figure in India, who he touched his disciple, his main disciple, to transmit to him all of his spiritual knowledge. So that disciple closed his eyes, the guru, or so-called guru, touched him. And then when the disciple opened his eyes, the guru was weeping. So the disciple asked, "Why are you weeping?" And the guru said, "Because now I've given all my knowledge to you and I don't have any left." So, Srila Prabhupada said, this is a material conception of spiritual knowledge. The more you give spiritual knowledge, the more you get. So, that should be our mood, you know, somehow or other. And quoting, referring to the quotation of St. Francis, quoted by Anujama Prabhu, that is actually a very important point, that every moment we should be preaching by our example. And Srila Prabhupada said, and it's in Srimad Bhagavatam, that just by appreciating a devotee, even if someone doesn't know that the devotee is a devotee, doesn't even know what a devotee is, but just by appreciating a devotee, they make advance. Srila Prabhupada says, if someone looks out the window and they see some devotees walking down the street, and the person just thinks, they look like very nice people, they make advancement. Just by appreciating the devotee. And so if we do things that will make people appreciate us, even like as simple as smiling at someone, and they appreciate that, then they make advancement. And that can also apply to family members. Dealing with family members who are not devotees can be quite challenging, depending, and it can be quite taxing also. But in general, if we act in such a way that they're pleased with us without compromising our principles, they will make advancement. even if we don't preach with words. There's one incident, it's a little personal, but not with family here. So I have one sibling who's a sister, and she's quite a dynamic person, which could be, anyway, she's quite a determined person, would be very determined. And so she lives in Santa Barbara, and one evening, this was like before I was going to go back to India after having been away for a long time. So she arranged a dinner for me and maybe one or two devotees and my cousin who also lived in Santa Barbara. It was like a big thing. And she made everything that I liked, that, you know, like dal, rice, broccoli, although I did see a little cartoon on the refrigerator that showed like a caveman and his wife, and the caveman says, "I didn't discover a fire so you could make broccoli." But, you know, broccoli, it was like a whole spread. But the problem was that it was a codicil. And I had assumed that the devotee with me, who also had a relationship with my sister, would have said, you know, my sister knows what a codicil is. So there we were, and you know, she put all her heart and soul into it. And I was really thinking, you know. And then maybe my brother, you know, what's the big thing, you know, once in a while. But I was thinking, no, you know, I sort of looked into the future. If I eat this, how am I going to feel? And I could say, I'm going to feel terrible. So my cousin is he's like a family therapist. He's sort of into Buddhism and this is related to Buddhism, not being a family therapist. And so I started praising the coloring, the texture, the presentation, showing my appreciation for what she did without eating any of the grains. And my cousin said, "Wow, you know, this is mindfulness. You know, this is what I try to do. This is what every meal should be like." And then I had what I could, you know, no grains. And I forget exactly what happened at the end. Something sort of fortunate happened a little later, and my cousin commented that, you know, this happened because you stuck to your principles. You know, you didn't compromise your principles. So, we should deal nicely with everyone, but at the same time, there are principles that we cannot compromise. And as this woman, as Radhanath Swami said once, the controllers, they don't like it if they can't control you. But if they can control you, they lose respect for you. I was actually consulting him. So he said, don't do anything, you know, because the controller wants you to. And don't do anything because the controller doesn't want you to do it. just do what you want to do, or in other words, what would please Krishna. Don't worry about the controller. So, yes, we were with Srila Prabhupada in so many circumstances, some awkward. Of course, with Prabhupada, nothing was really awkward, because he always seemed to know what to do. But it's like really, recently I read a posting from His Holiness Ramaprabha Swami, a few weeks ago, about onions and garlic. Did anyone see that? Yeah. Well, it's a whole story from something Prabhupada said, really how bad onions and garlic are. And then, in addition to that, His Holiness Ramaprabha Swami quoted some verses from Shastra about, like, the terrible results of eating onions and garlic, such things. So we, after the first Delhi Pandav, the lady who was the main organizer, one of the main organizers, invited Srila Prabhupada and the devotees to her house. There's a program, Prabhupada gave a lecture, we had Prabhupada's books on display. Prabhupada, I asked, you know, should we make a presentation about membership? I said, yes, go ahead. And then after that, we went into the house. This was outdoors in the garden, lawn. And so it turned out that there was onions in one of the preparations. And Mother Malati, you know, detected the onions and said, oh, she's a problem. You can't eat this. You know, this has onions. And Prabhupada smiled and said, no, there are no onions in this. But she pulled out some notion of how there are. She smiles, no, there are no onions in this. Because, you know, she had gone about it surfacely. She didn't want to hurt her feelings by rejecting part of her offering. So, yeah, there's so much to learn from the whole Paramparā, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Six Goswamis, and especially Srila Prabhupada, who's our immediate founder of Charis. And it's really gratifying that after 50 years of Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America and the founding of this Kham, that so many people are recognizing Srila Prabhupada in very profound ways. So now I'd like to request Anuchana Prabhu maybe tell us some more about the gala event held in Washington, D.C. in appreciation of Srila Prabhupada and 50 years of his life. Hare Krishna.
Marge is speaking about how people make advancement by appreciating devotees. We can understand, especially when that appreciation is there for Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's movement. So just take a few minutes and discuss about this event that we had in Washington, D.C. just last Tuesday, the 13th. I think it's appropriate to talk about it here in Houston because Houston is probably one of the few temples in North America that could be doing similar things or perhaps things on an even bigger scale. Because, in large part, because the temple that's here, well, understood today we're doing some kind of Food for Life program with one of the other organizations, one of the schools in the area. So many ways we're reaching out and people appreciating the movement. So, in Washington, we were kind of thinking all along that, you know, ISKCON was formulated in New York City, and hopefully New York would do a big event. And for various reasons, New York, they got 3 months to go, but as of now, they haven't done a big event. So we thought, well, then we have to do something in Washington, D.C. This is our 15th anniversary. You may have heard that in the Bhagavatam of the Mandy, you might have seen the video, they brought the Prime Minister of England to come and do the groundbreaking ceremony for the new temple. Now, I'm not going to discuss if there was any kind of correlation between his doing service for Krishna and his losing the election in his office a week later. That's not a good thing to remind political leaders if they come to visit our temples. It is described when you worship Krishna, he gives you special favor. Sometimes he takes everything away. So we don't talk about that too much. But apparently it works. So the Prime Minister came, and of course we've heard it in Calcutta when they launched the big event. Prabhupada's leaving India, they filled up a stadium. They actually had so many people they filled it twice. So many ministers came, so many VIPs. There's a big event there, there's a big event in London, there's a big event coming up in Belgium, in the heart of Europe, and so many other places. So he thought, well, we need to do something special in North America. So we organized the event. It took several months to do, and I just kind of described the outcome last Tuesday. We knew we wanted to have some government leaders and some other important people. So I was in Boston last year with Ambarish Prabhu at the anniversary of Prabhupada coming to America. They had a beautiful festival there, rented a boat, went out into the ocean. Anybody there for the Boston event? As far as you know, okay, fortunate souls that we are. It was a beautiful event. Very inspiring. And Ambarish Prabhu was there, so I said, Prabhu, you know, thinking, how are we going to organize a big thing? And Ambarish is a wonderful devotee, and the fact that he's Alfred Ford carries some weight, it carries momentum. People want to meet Alfred Ford, they want to be in a place with Alfred Ford. So Ambarish Prabhu or Alfred Ford agreed to come to Washington, D.C., agreed to keep the whole month of that time, October, open. So then we went back and we started looking for venues and this and that and sparing all the details. But the net result was, last Tuesday we held an event, we worked it out this bit. Because hotels generally, they don't let you as a temple bring outside cooking, but there's a devotee in the Washington, D.C. community that owns a vegetarian restaurant, vegetarian catering. We worked with him closely. And he had a connection with the hotel. He was one of the official caterers of that hotel. So we thought, that's Krishna's ranking. And another devotee had had some relationship with this hotel and said, you know, they give us a good opportunity, so it was very expensive in terms of our sense. There was a hotel just 3 blocks from the White House. You walk out the door of the hotel and there's the White House right there. And every president of the United States is Harry Truman has attended events at that hotel. In fact, the day we went to look at the venue, there was about 30 people putting up lights, audiovisual. It was like ants crawling over this room. Because the next day was a big event, and they listed off some of the people that were coming. Obama wasn't coming, but one of the Bushes was coming, former Secretary of State was there. All these big, 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 big people. We thought, wow, this is a powerful room. This would be a nice place to have our event. So as it worked out, Krishna allowed us to do that. So last Tuesday we invited 300 people, and about 200 of them, 225 were members of our congregation, out of their generosity of their hearts, purchased tickets that allowed us to pay for the rest of it. And we had about 75 VIPs, religious leaders, advocates of religious liberty around the country. We had Jewish leaders, Catholic leaders, Protestant leaders, government leaders. We had 3 embassies who represented. The Nepali ambassador came, the deputy ambassador from Bangladesh came, the third person minister from India came. And we had a series of speakers. So we had one of the people that came was Tulsi Gabbard. Raise your hand if you've heard of Tulsi Gabbard. So Tulsi Gabbard is the first Hindu woman congressperson in history. And she also happens to be a Prabhupada Nuba. She's a follower of Srila Prabhupada. Have you seen any of her videos about Diwali or Janmashtami? If you haven't, you should Google her. Google Tulsi Gabbard Janmashtami. She quotes Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. She talks about the Lord Krishna. She talks about love of Krishna as the goal of life, etc. So we knew it was important in her come. So we lined up for participation. And sometimes with congresspeople, they show up for 5 minutes and they say hi and they leave, or maybe 20 minutes. So we contacted her office and said, we'd really appreciate it if you could come and stay a long time. You know, we start at 6, we go to 10. Is there any chance she can come for the whole thing? She's a, you know, we're her extended family. This is a holy event glorifying Srila Prabhupada. She loves Prabhupada. She's a follower of Prabhupada. And they wrote back about a week ahead of time, said, we've been able to arrange the schedule. She's there the whole time, but there's just one favor she'd like to ask. We said, what's that? Said, she wants to know after she speaks, is it okay if she sings Hare Krishna on her ukulele? So as Mark says, devotees are flexible, tolerant. We're starting to go back and say, well, normally we wouldn't do that, but since you're a congresswoman, you know, just this one time, you know, practicality, I was like jumping out the window. She wants to chant Hare Krishna right then. So that was kind of nice. Then we got a message from Joseph Kennedy's office. He said that I'd also like to come. We almost had Sheila Jackson Lee, who was your congresswoman, here. We were talking to her office, talking to many other congresspersons. So some very important people came. So we had a reception for an hour, and devotees were milling around talking to some VIPs. It was very nice, all catered for Shabbat, and it was black tie.
Don't know what
that is. You know what black tie means? Black tie optional. We had to look it up. The planning team had to look it up. Black tie optional means tuxedo or dark suit. And it's kind of funny because as we were selling tickets to the event, I had a couple of members of our extended congregation who apparently, like me, hadn't gone to a lot of black tie events. And one or two of them came up and said, Prabhuji, I have a problem. I said, what's that? I said, well, I have a suit, but I don't own a black tie. So we had to clarify, no, you don't have to wear black tie. Any color tie is fine. It's okay. So the devotees came, they milled around. Congressman Kennedy came there, had a chance to introduce him to so many different people, devotees and other people. And then at 7 o'clock, the doors, it's kind of like here, the meeting room is here, and then the doors open, electronically the doors open. And as everybody walked into the room, in this room we were playing kind of sitar background type of mood music, so to speak. When they walked into the big room, loudly playing, we had George Harrison singing My Sweet Lord, where he chants Hare Krishna. The first time Hare Krishna mantra was really introduced in a big way in the Western world. And then everyone sat down, and then we had our different speeches. And the first speech was Dr. Graham Schwag, Garuda Prabhu, Harvard educated, who talked about the authenticity of the Hare Krishna tradition. Again, this is in a room full of people, many of whom have not visited our temple. They know a little bit about our community, they respect some of the work we're doing, but they haven't necessarily visited the temple. So Dr. Schwag starts out introducing the forms of our tradition. And then after he spoke for about 5 or 10 minutes, then Amarish Prabhu stood up. And all this is going to be online. There's a nice story in ISKCON News. You can look up for more details. But then Amarish Prabhu stood up in his tuxedo. And he said, you know, the reason I became a Hare Krishna was I would never have to wear one of these things. He looked very handsome. There's some stunning photos of him. It was a beautiful room. But the devotee, there's one devotee stayed up all night long to create these beautiful flower arrangements. We had huge flower arrangements in front of the two stands. Big fancy room, big chandelier, beautiful, beautiful room. And then I'm reaching around to talk about how most people don't know it, but his father is famous for his innovation, his great-grandfather, but that Henry Ford attributed that to reincarnation. He believed in reincarnation, because he said it, Amrish Prabhu mentioned, he said at the age of 9, his great-grandfather could take apart a watch and put it back together again. So he had some sense, and he said he used to actually, when people would visit his factories, he'd give them a brochure about reincarnation. So Amrish Prabhu said, my great-grandfather was the original book distributor about reincarnation. So he spoke, everyone appreciated. He's a wonderful down-to-earth devotee, very magnanimous, wonderful soul. Then we had a woman named Christina Arriaga, who was the head of an organization called the Beckett Fund, which is a non-profit entity, corporation, whatever, of attorneys whose whole sole purpose is to fight for religious freedom. For Catholics, and mostly Catholic, and Protestants, Muslims, Jews, Sikhs, etc. And we've been very active with them. We've signed on to a lot of cases. They won 5 cases in front of the Supreme Court in a recent year or two. And many times the Christian movement has come forward and said, if it's about religious freedom, you call us. If it's about Catholic rights, call us. Muslim rights, call us. Sikh rights, we want to be there because this is an essential principle for us, practicing and protecting other people's religious freedoms. So she spoke about all the wonderful work that ISKCON is doing in promoting religious freedom. She even said at one point, she said, you know, when you first started in America, people were so ignorant, they thought, they accused you of brainwashing. Like what you said, Marcia, she said, but you stuck with your principles. And she said, 50 years later, look where you are and look at the appreciation that's been given to your movement tonight. And she's a, what's called a commission on the United States Commission of International Religious Freedom. That's the same organization that fought for us when we had trouble in Kazakhstan. It's a quasi-government organization. She was appointed by the Speaker of the House, directly appointed. And she's there talking about ISKCON, talking about Prabhupada's contributions. And then Shesha Prabhu spoke about the next 50 years of ISKCON and the contributions of the principles of Bhagavad Gita and some of Darshanaha, seeing everyone equally, humility, the different principles spoke very wonderfully. Then we had a beautiful performance of Bharatanatyam dance by Anakaini and Kumari, her sister, who came in from New York and Latra. And then, kind of maybe the more heart, well, even more kind of going deep in the heart, we had a professor who was a Muslim scholar. His name is Dr. Shana Kirmani, and he stood up and talked about his personal gratitude for ISKCON. And particularly Prabhupada, Maharaj knows about his story. In fact, Maharaj, he met years ago, but he, I don't know if he would remember you, and I don't know if you remember him, but he was to express the story. He was a graduate student at the Harvard Center for the Study of World Religions when Prabhupada went there to speak at Harvard, driven. Maharaj was the driver. He can talk later. I think they got lost on the way home, if you told me that too. Is that the same story? It was. But this one young Muslim scholar, he was walking by the room. He said he had a meeting with his professor, a private meeting. It's a big deal. You're a Harvard student, you're a private meeting with your professor. That's important. He looked in the room. He happened to go walking by. It's the Sperry room. And he saw a man sitting in saffron. He caught his eye and he stopped. And he thought, this is something special. So he just forgot his meeting with his professor. He just didn't go. No texting those days. I'm sorry I'm late. You know, I've got a stomach ache. He just didn't show up. And he stayed to hear Prabhupada speak. And he described, and he's an elderly man now. He's, you know, in his 70s. He's up there in his tuxedo, talking to this group of 300 people about how Prabhupada changed his life. And he said that, he's told us other times, he said, when I heard Swami Bhaktivinoda Prabhu speak, he said, I became convinced at that moment that there's truth in every religion. So I was so moved by him. And he said that at the end of his little talk, he wrote a poem in Bengali. He doesn't speak Bengali, but he wrote a poem in, he must speak itself, it's not his native tongue. He wrote a poem in Bengali in glorification of Prabhupada. And his poem was something along the lines of, I was standing at the door, and you offered me a flower, and it's still blooming till today. And he told us in a separate meeting one time, he said, you know, it's very strange. He said that I'm Muslim. He said, but when I get in trouble, I think of him. He said, you think I would think of something in my own tradition, but I think of him. See, he was sharing some of these stories. Then we had a Catholic scholar, a professor from Georgetown University, who stood up and talked about how 1965, very famous pivotal point in the history of the Catholic Church, they did something, a document called Nostra Aetate, which was when the Catholic Church for the first time officially recognized that there's truth in other religious traditions. The same year Prabhupada landed in North America. So the scholar, Catholic scholar, was appreciating Vice President Prabhupada's contributions and noting how significant it is that these two events occurred at the same time. Then the minister from the Indian Embassy stood up, talked for a few minutes about how much ISKCON was doing in India, how Prabhupada was such a great emissary of Indian culture, spreading the tradition all around the world, how ISKCON's feeding over 1 million children every day, like that. Then we had one of our local Maryland delegates, the majority leader of the House of Delegates in Maryland. He stood up and talked about his own grandfather, was an immigrant to America and all the challenges that he faced and all the prejudice, and he was saying, just like my grandfather, probably the same way, underwent so many difficulties, and just see today all the successes that have been there. And then we ended with Tulsi Gabbard. And if you go to ISKCON News, iskcon.org, news.iskcon.org, you can see the video of her talk. But she talked about how the whole world today is being affected by sectarianism, and how there's so much violence in the name of religion. This is a U.S. congresswoman speaking in Washington, D.C., in front of 300 people, Jewish leaders, Muslim leaders, Sikh leaders, etc. And she's saying, Lord Chaitanya's movement came to teach against this sectarianism. And she quoted Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who taught the principles of Krishna consciousness and tolerance and working and appreciating other religious traditions. And then she glorified Srila Prabhupada and all the wondrous things that Srila Prabhupada has done for about 7 or 8 minutes, very enthusiastically. And then she was done, she picked up what she called her, it's a mixture of a guitar and a ukulele, guitar looking. What is it called? Get ukulele or something like that. Yeah. It's like a miniature guitar. And began strumming and chanting Hare Krishna, which she did for about 4 or 5 minutes. And then one of the bands, the Juggernauts, Vishwaguru, you know, and Gorvani, and some other Puru, Shrava Prabhu, came up, started playing bass while she's finishing her kirtan. And everybody, and she told everybody, stand up. U.S. Congresswoman, stand up, chant with me. And everybody stood up and was applauding and swaying back side to side, room full of people in dhotis and tuxedos. And it was absolutely wonderful. It's just, you know, hard to describe what an experience it was. And then we ended up with a big kirtan. And I mentioned, you know, in the middle point there was a wonderful catered prasadam meal. And people just walking around in so much appreciation. And Yogeshwar Prabhu, he wrote me a letter afterwards. Prabhupada's disciple recently published the book Swami in a Strange Land, the most recent biography of Prabhupada. He worked with many, many professional firms in New York City for years. He wrote and he said a friend of his came. Because a lot of devotees brought friends. Like there's a couple doctors brought the president of their hospitals. Some people brought their business associates. Some people brought, you know, other VIPs, the chance to expose them to Krishna consciousness in this way of appreciation. And Yogeshwar Prabhu had one friend that he brought, who he wrote, he said, he's attended hundreds of black tie events in Washington, D.C. And he said he's never been to such an inspiring event with a more interesting group of speakers. So it really was a wonderful event. We've never really done anything like this in America before. And I would humbly request that the devotees in the Eastern Europe to think that you have a similar opportunity. You've got a beautiful temple, you're involved in a larger community, you've got a very wonderful and broad congregation, and people are looking for leadership. There's a lot of problems out there that they recognize. They don't know what to do about the environment. I was speaking with a devotee earlier today, you know, it's like they know we're doing things to destroy the environment. How do we stop? They know how to stop. They don't have a spiritual process to help control the greed and the envy and the lust. They don't have things like that. They've all come to, so many people come to an understanding we need to get rid of sectarianism. But they don't really have their traditions that all teach to the depth that we do, that we are all children of God, we all are spiritual beings. It's not that some people are connected to God, some people are chosen, some people are saved. No. As Maharaj is saying, everybody's connected to Krishna. Krishna wants to engage everyone in service. So there's wonderful opportunities for us to take Krishna consciousness. This is our 50th anniversary year. We're celebrating 50 years. But now we have to think, what's the next 50 years? And in large part, as it's described in the verse, it means being creative, being willing, like Maharaj said, Prabhupada was willing to associate with such different types of people. In those days, it was hippies and you know, dealing with the bombs of the Bowery and so much impersonalism and craziness. So much craziness was there. Prabhupada put up with that to try to spread the Krishna conscious movement, and he transformed it. So that was the first 50 years. So now the next 50 years, Prabhupada wants to work for each of you. So we should think about that. What can I do? And not hold back and think, like we saw that in Washington, D.C., we had a few people even, they told us, well, we need to rent a hotel for it. Why spend the money in a hotel? It's because, like Prabhupada said in my book, why are we building this big building? So we have this perfect, you know, grass hut. It's the perfect environment for practicing Krishna consciousness. And he pointed to the big building they were building in Mayapur. He said, but this building is Vijarshi, it's the mode of passion. Why don't we just stay in our grass huts? He said, because who will come? People won't come to this grass hut. But if we build buildings like this, they'll come. We build temples like this, they'll come. We go to places 3 blocks from the White House, and, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, U.S. Congresswoman, will come. Joseph Kennedy, Congressman from Massachusetts, will come. The heads of the United States Conference of International Religious Freedom will come, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to think creatively. How are we going to make, help people understand Prabhupada's contributions? In a pure-hearted way, but not be limited. Don't just think that whatever we did the last 50 years, that's the box. We can't go outside that. We have to think creatively. We stay within the principles Prabhupada gave us, but we have to be creative and don't hold back. And just like I was saying to members of the Washington, D.C. temple, because the tickets were $250. You don't go to a lot of Hare Krishna events, and the building the temples are different. You don't go to a lot of events that are $250. And some people think, well, why spend all this money? He used to spend a lot more money than that. It was a relatively expensive event. But the impact on people's minds, you know, people were saying they'd never been to an event like that. It was such a beautiful experience. People were saying, we had no idea the contributions of your spiritual master. We had no idea 516. And when in the reception, we had a beautiful display of Prabhupada's books and a beautiful display by an artist, Kim Waters, who just done this beautiful book called Illustrations of Bhagavad Gita. So people are floating around networking, looking at Prabhupada's. We had 25 languages of Bhagavad Gita displayed. And beautiful signs. So people walk around, oh my gosh, 516 million books in 50 years. 87 languages, 25 translations that are right there in front of us, and all this beautiful artwork. You're preserving the art, and you're transforming it, making it available. You're preserving the dance, and you're making it available around the world. You're preserving the literature, making it available around the world. You're preserving the kirtan, making it available. They were really impressed. We have wonderful, amazing things, and we can't keep it inside the buildings. We got to take it outside. That's the proper one, that's what this verse is all about. So we had a wonderful first 50 years. Now it's up to all of you, all of us, to think about what's the next 50 years and how are we going to spread the movement even further. We got a good foothold. You got maybe what? How many people come here in Janmashtami? How many? No, sorry. How many? What's the number? 5,000. How many people live in Houston?
5 million.
Okay, so you got 13,995,000 to go. You had a very good start. How many do you have? Oh, that's easy. Oh, okay, I thought you had a big challenge. You only have 4,995,000 to go. No problem. How old are you guys? 16 and... You're 14. Okay, so the next 50 years, you're only going to be 66 and 64. How old are you, Maharaj?
69.
Maharaj is 69, I'm 62. Okay, so the next 50 years, 4 million to go, okay? Okay, thank you very much.